This is David Duke. This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world live. That's right, live. Anywhere in the world where people have an internet connection, they can hear this broadcast live. So that means it's good morning to America, and good afternoon to our brethren in Europe, and good evening to other Europeans and Americans, wherever they may dwell in the world. It's also a greeting, I must say, to all the people of the world, because indeed we have a common cause in a way. I believe the cause of Europeans and American people is a similar cause to all other peoples, in that we simply are a freedom-loving people who want to preserve our own heritage, our own traditions, our own freedom. We don't want any part of the so-called New World Order. We don't believe in it. We don't seek it. We know that democracy, as it's being expressed in the Western world, is a lie. It's nothing but mass media, so-called bamboozle to democratize masses who have very little input and very little opportunity to judge the candidates of their choice. We have an orchestrated democracy in all of our countries, a democracy that's not in any way of a resemblance to that of our forebears, to the democracy that the original Greeks envisioned, the Athenians who developed these concepts and spread them around the world, or what even what the Romans practiced, and certainly not what the early Americans practiced. In the early days of the United States of America, you had elections where men actually went out and campaigned among the people. There was no mass media. People got to hear debate with other candidates. People got to judge their candidates because it was small enough. The population was small enough that people could judge these individuals on the basis of their abilities and the fact that they knew these people personally. They could talk to them personally. They weren't far off and aloof from the people. Today, very few people even know who their congressman is. They may have met them once if they're lucky, but they certainly don't have any real input to them. And most people in politics are decided by the special interests, the so-called PACs. I must say I was distinguished in the fact that in my election to the House of Representatives in Louisiana, I never took a penny in PAC money. And running for governor and senator also as well, I never took a penny in special interest money. I think I'm very different than most of the candidates out there who were running. The same thing is true when I ran for the United States Congress. I believe that people should be able to choose their candidates, and the American political system needs a dramatic overhaul. We need true campaign reform. But as Stephen Steinlight, who was the deputy head of the American Jewish Committee, the largest Jewish organization in the United States, he said, you know, hopefully we've got to continue to keep campaign reform from coming to the United States. Why is that, ladies and gentlemen? Because the Jewish supremacists, these supporters of international Zionism, these same people who got us involved in this insane war against every principle, every interest, every value of the United States of America, they couldn't exercise their power if they had a free democratic system. That is, a system where every candidate was on an even footing. That the elections were not decided by how much special interest money a candidate can acquire, was not decided by how much favorable publicity or unfavorable publicity an enemy received in the mass media. The unelected mass media, which has more power than the Senate or the Congress of the United States of America. They can decide who is in the Senate or the Congress of the United States of America by simply the fact that they can choose to promote whom they desire, and they can cut down and attack whom they hate. We truly have a yellow press in the United States of America, but it's a yellow press with a star on it, my friends. It's a yellow press that will defame any individual who dares to stand up for the American people and opposed to the power of international Zionism. And now Zionism has its ugly grip upon the policies of the government of the United States, and we have treason going on in the highest levels. Because make no mistake about it, what happened with the Libby case, quote, Scooter Libby, Lewis Scooter Libby, was nothing short of treason. The Jewish neocons supporting this anti-American war in Iraq and rushing this country toward war, they were even willing to betray this country's interests by outing a member of the CIA and, in fact, the entire group of CIA members associated with that official, Valerie Plame. Because they wanted to discredit the man who showed that yellowcake uranium was nothing but a lie, they were willing to betray the American intelligence network. That's not simply obstruction of justice. It's not simply a question of lying to a grand jury or perjury. It's really a question of treason. And if you really want to look at it with a straight face and a clear mind, what's happened in Iraq has been nothing short of treason. When you send American young men and even young women today off to bleed, be maimed, and die for a lie, that's treasonous. That's absolutely treasonous. That is betrayal of those lives, of those Americans, of those courageous Americans who are trying to do their duty for their country. And it is a scandal of incredible proportions, ladies and gentlemen. This is Halloween, and sometimes I think that our government is like a Halloween skit today. It seems everything is in the shadows. It seems we have ghosts and goblins devouring our national will and value system in this country. And, of course, even Halloween, which is a tradition of Europeans and something that's deeply ingrained in European heritage, even that is under attack. There was a recent article in the Boston Globe called Diversity Adds Up to Gray, PC Monoculture. You know, it was talking about a student at a school in, I believe it was Massachusetts, where students at the Underwood Elementary School, where they have had Halloween banned because it supposedly offends certain religious beliefs. Well, I guess everything offends certain religious beliefs. You know, the Christian belief can't even be practiced anymore in our schools, as you know. It's no longer Christmas holidays. We will, this winter, be having winter break, not Christmas break. Winter holidays, not Christmas holidays. And my God, we must ban any mention of the manger or the three wise men or any sort of religious connotation to Christmas, even though these connotations are deeply ingrained in the history and the heritage of the European people. Many schools can't even sing Christmas carols within the walls of those schools anymore, even in after-hours events, because somehow that is violating church and state. No, ladies and gentlemen, it's not violating church and state. It's violating the will of our Jewish supremacist masters who are determined to wipe out any sense of tradition and value in our people. You see, because tradition, heritage, even the makeup of the United States of America as it is with the traditional European background and the unity that comes from that, this is destructive to their ends because they thrive on what, again, Stephen Steinlein calls their policy of divide and conquer. And if we have one people of one basic heritage, one culture, one tradition, and we know exactly what our desires and our interests are, it's much harder for them to work their way. It's much harder for them to control and to pervert our national purpose and twist it toward that of Israel. The entire Iraq war, from beginning to end, has been a product of the Jewish neocons and the interests of Israel rather than the United States of America. And I think we all know that listening to this program by now. I hope you do. If you're new to this program, please go to my website, read a lot of this material on davidduke.com. And by the way, this is our new time, and that's 9 o'clock Eastern. That's right, 9 o'clock, isn't it? No, it's actually 10 o'clock Eastern time, 9 o'clock Central time, 8 o'clock Mountain, and 7 o'clock. I think that's correct. I mean, I get kind of confused with the times here. yes, it is. It's eight. It's actually 8 o'clock in the morning in the Central time zone. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's good to be with you. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm so happy that I'm able to be in Eastern Europe right now and working with a number of patriotic groups trying to increase the political clout and influence of the people over here of our persuasion. And indeed, we have to begin to understand where our loyalties lie and how that we have a sense, we must have a sense of brotherhood with our people overseas and around the world. I'm a very patriotic American, no question about it. But it's time that we understand that America, its purpose, as our forefathers wrote in the preamble of our Constitution of the United States, they said this Constitution is, and this government is for ourselves and our posterity. Right? We're losing, obviously, our posterity in America. What is the meaning of a country, by the way, ladies and gentlemen? What truly is the meaning of a nation? If you look at it historically, if you look at it in terms of tradition, history, of the natural order of things, nations came from tribes, our races, our peoples, people with a common heritage, a common value, a common culture, mostly a common language. That's the original term, nation. And any nation that does not have this kind of a concept is a nation that's doomed to difficulties and problems and hatreds and violence and disruption, because that kind of a nation goes against human nature. Yes, you can have the presence of minorities, of both racial and political and religious minorities in a nation, but once that minority level tips toward a major factor in terms of the politics or the culture or the heritage of the country begins to unravel. And we've seen that all over the world. We've seen that in centuries of terrible hatred, rancor, bitterness, death, and destruction, and even Ireland, where the people are very similar in terms of their background, very, very similar, but different enough as to have tremendous enmity between them, both in religion, both in culture, and personality. We see the same thing, of course, go on in the Balkans, and we have a problem there, not only in terms of ethnicity, but also in terms of religion, between the Christian and the Muslim faith, which obviously has some very stark differences. And I guess we've got those same kind of differences in America, even between the so-called Jewish faith and the Christian faith in our country. Even though the Jews are supposedly represent only 2.5% of the population of the United States of America, we find the religion treated almost on a 50-50 basis. In fact, it's hard to hear a politician or a candidate or anyone even evoke the name Christian without saying Judeo-Christian or Jewish Christian. They don't even say the word Christian anymore without mentioning Jewish. And most of the suits and most of the legal proposals and legal actions that have been taken to get Christianity out of the schools, getting prayers out or getting Christmas carols out or making other actions against our Christian traditions, most of them have been supported by and driven on by Jewish organizations like the American Jewish Committee, the Jewish Federation, and many other groups that exist around the United States of America, just as they've worked very strongly to break down our immigration policies, both in the United States and truly all over the world. They've been behind these same kind of changes in Canada. They've been behind the same kind of changes in Australia, in New Zealand, and in many European nations as well. And, of course, Hollywood always tends to work on this kind of a theme. As I mentioned in my last broadcast, they've got the new movie showing right now called The Legend of Zorro. It's a Steven Spielberg production, and this production it's full of the multicultural or multiracial propaganda that we can expect from our national media. The real bad guys in the film are white racists. In fact, they're supporters of the Confederacy and aristocratic Frenchmen. Of course, that's naturally because the Jewish neocons and the Jewish supremacists hated France because France dared to tell the truth about the weapons of mass destruction. You heard all the propaganda, this artificially created anti-French propaganda created in the beginning of the Iraq War. The French said, no, you shouldn't go to war. We don't think there are weapons of mass destruction. We don't see the evidence for it. Give the inspector some time, right? And the mass media said, oh, my God, the French and all the pundits and all the people in the pay and the persuasion of the Jewish supremacists started absolutely attacking everything French. That became freedom fries, right? And the French were attacked in endless jokes on television from the Jewish community, and they were attacked by our politicians. And yet the truth is, of course, that France, as well as other Americans such as myself, Patrick Buchanan and others, not Patrick Buchanan so much on the weapons of mass destruction, but certainly myself and others, talked about the fact that there was no evidence, there was no credible evidence that Saddam Hussein still had any weapons of mass destruction. And the overwhelming fact of that, or the proof of that, is the fact that these weapons inspectors, including dozens and dozens and dozens of CIA men, and the fact that we covered almost every inch of the country with CIA spy satellites, and we had tremendous numbers of agents. We were offering millions of dollars reward for anybody in the Saddam Hussein regime to come up and just tell us where these weapons of mass destruction are, and we'll give you asylum, and we'll give you millions of dollars. You'll live the rest of your life like a king. But for some reason, none of these people could come up with any evidence for us. Nobody. Not the satellites, not the agents on the ground. You can't move two or three tons of weapons of mass destruction from underground bunkers in a matter of minutes. If we really had the facts on our side, if we really knew for a fact that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, we would have sent those inspectors in to find them. And then, using that rationale and justification, America could have easily marshaled support for that war from many of the European nations. It was a lie from the beginning. Absolutely a lie. And you know what? The French were right. But have we heard any apologies from the American media, from the American mass media? So in Zorro, this may sound silly, right? It's just a movie. It's just Zorro, the legend of Zorro. It's just a fictional, silly movie. But millions and millions of people watch these kind of movies, Americans, and they get all these impressions. The evil guy in the movie is what? He's a French aristocrat. He's also very European, and he's part of this cabal, right? This European cabal of these aristocrats, the Knights of Aragon, I think it's called. I haven't seen the movie yet. I just know this from the reviews so far, but I've compared a lot of reviews, and I think I've got it down what the movie's about. And the enemies, it's about California in 1850, when America was working on opening up the California territory, to American expansion, to the West, obviously. Well, the evil ones were these white racists who didn't want this territory to be opened up because there were too many non-whites in the territory. Well, that was never a question for our ancestors, white or not, in this country, because we knew at that point whites had a tremendous birth rate. We were a healthy people. We were a nation certainly not under the control of the Jewish supremacists in our media or government. We believed in our manifest destiny of Cetus, the shining sea. But anyway, it was white racist. And of course, one of the white racist evil ones is a guy with bad teeth. Now, that's about the worst thing you can say about somebody today, right? They've got bad teeth. And that's, the evil killer, murderer, person, is this white racist with bad teeth. And the guy behind its evil genius is a Frenchman. Now, Frenchman, how do you get that in Spanish California? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me, but this is from the furtive imagination of people like Steven Spielberg and Mr. Kurtzman and these other individuals who write and produce this absolute slop. This garbage. Of course, during the film, the evil ones are trying to create weapons of mass destruction. Of course, during that time, guess what it is? It's nitroglycerin, and they're going to bomb Washington with nitroglycerin. Does that sound familiar with the threat of terrorism today from the Islamic world? Does that sound a little familiar to you? I think somewhere you should look into your heart and soul and see how they manipulate us every day, even in something like a simple movie like this. I'm looking for your comments and thoughts. You can go to stormfront.org, the town hall section. And, of course, this program is archived. I know it's early in the morning for some of you, but you can listen to this program now live, and you can also listen to it later in the day at any time. And by having this earlier time, our program is more current, because up until now, only till about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon was the program current. It was really the previous day's show. So this is a good move forward, and I hope that a lot of you will begin tuning in the morning. It's a nice way to start your day. And, of course, any time during the day you can download this program, and you can offer your questions and your thoughts and your opinions, and I'm more than happy to share them with our listeners, both in the United States and elsewhere around the world. It's very, 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 very good to be with you, and I thank you very much for your presence here this morning. I've got a lot of nice letters. I've got a letter here from some press around the world, and from the newest editor of a major publication. He says, thank you so much for your material. Here's one from a gentleman named Kevin. He says, I just came across this article today, and I thought you'd be interested. If you haven't already seen it, the UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter mentions Israel as the neocons' motivation for the Iraq War. Here's the quotes and part of the story. On the subject of which country will be the subject of the next neocon invasion, Ritter commented, quote, there are elements within the Bush administration, especially Donald Rumsfeld associates, Doug Feith, Wolfowitz, and others whose long goal crossed the line of serving America, and they started serving another country out there, Israel. And another quote, this administration wants to go to Syria, wants to go to Iran. Iran has turned into a little more difficult of a proposition, both diplomatically and militarily and financially. So Iran may be pushed back to the back burner right now, but it doesn't mean it's going away. We should never forget that. We're going to go small first, and I think that with Syria, the feeling is with the Bush administration, this is a very easy target. It's one that would make Israel very happy if we took out this regime. In fact, I'll make a comment on that, ladies and gentlemen. In the letter, a clean break, strategy for securing the realm. This is by Feith and Pearl and other major Jewish supremacists in the United States of America. They talk about Syria as one of their main targets. And interestingly enough, this paper, which was written for Benjamin Netanyahu, not for an American. These are Americans writing it for a foreign country. And these are people in charge and who had tremendous influence on American foreign policy. See, our foreign policy has been hijacked by Israel. And that's why we suffered things such as the horrendous tragedy of 9/11. And anyway, so, you know, this, they said there very clearly in the paper, said the way to Damascus, of course, which is in Syria, leads through Baghdad. But let me tell you, these kind of wars, if we engage in them, are going to be devastating for the country. As you know, we can't even control Iraq. I hate to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, to give you be the bearer of bad news, and I guess I'll find a lot of criticism for this, but let me tell you something very clearly. We have already lost the Iraq War. America actually lost the Iraq War from day one, because what we've done is we've turned the world against us. We've increased the level of terrorism against us. We've increased the ranks of the terrorists. But even right now in Iraq itself, ladies and gentlemen, we control only a tiny percentage of the country. As the British journalist Robert Fisk has said so well, in fact, most journalists do what they call hotel journalism in that country. They stay in the hotel rooms because they're afraid to venture out. They don't venture out, and they sure don't venture out of the green zone in Iraq, the highly secured zone in Baghdad. But if you go out of Baghdad, as Fisk has and many other people have, you go immediately into the countryside, you find the roadblocks abandoned, you find the police stations abandoned. In actual fact, ladies and gentlemen, the insurgents control almost the entire country rather than our occupying forces. Our occupying forces are almost prisoners in their own compounds and in their own areas. And they venture out in their Humvees and fortified vehicles and sometimes not so fortified vehicles at great risk and peril. And that's why we've got a death toll now, over 2,000 Americans, and this death toll is only increasing. And even worse, you know, we keep a lot more people alive today than we ever used to in war, because we have such new and modern and fantastically advanced medical treatments. But what it means is that we're keeping a lot of military personnel alive who would have died before, who have terrible maiming and horrendous wounds, who are crippled, who would never walk or even move their fingers or their hands or their arms, again, in addition to their legs. Men and women who are blinded, who will never see again. Men and women who will never be able to have a child. Men and women who will never know the joy, in fact, of sexual intimacy again because of the wounds they've suffered. Men and women who have suffered terrible disfigurement, who look like something now out of the Phantom of the Opera, rather than the beautiful countenance that they had before this war. Now, this war is creating a terrible, terrible cost to the American people. And the suffering of so many of these men and women will also be borne by their families and by their loved ones, and many of them will be in pain for the rest of their lives. I really believe the figure now is somewhere between 20 and 30,000. The government tries to reduce it, but even the most conservative figures show about 18 to 19,000 Americans already wounded from this war. We had tremendous numbers that suffered ill effects and medical problems from the first Gulf War, where we only had combat basically for about 3 or 4 weeks. And in this war, ladies and gentlemen, these men have had the stress and the exposure to chemical and toxic elements for months. In fact, some of them for years and additional tours of duty. And we've had people being away from their families for even as much as 15 months or up to 2 years, right in the middle of their careers, and sometimes being separated in the midst of a fragile family life where there's problems between husband and wife, and this separation just basically ends the marriage. And also it has a tremendous and a dire effect upon the finances of many families. The hidden cost of this war, you know, we've already spent about somewhere around $280 billion on this war. But as one article showed from the New York Times, the hidden cost of this war is probably more like $1.3 trillion because of the medical care required by these wounded people for years to come and all the other auxiliary costs of this war. It's just unbelievable. It's just a robbery of the American treasury, and we're borrowing against the future. And ladies and gentlemen, if we enter another war, if we go into Syria or we go into Iran, you know, I can tell you that the cost will be so enormous. It can do nothing but bankrupt, you know, the American people, bankrupt the American nation. And the casualties at that time would be absolutely horrendous. Horrendous. I mean, it's hard to even express the damage that set such a prolonged war in Syria and Iran would do, not only to the tremendous numbers of American personnel, but, you know, also to the American economy. And yet we continue to embark upon it because our policy is still going on. There's a post from Gunrunner. It's actually Paranoid in Aspland. He says, David, what's your opinion of electronic voting machines? Are you concerned by a lack of paper trail? Is the software Windows biased? I have read some that some are manufactured by Diebold, a Rothschild-owned company. What's your take on this? Well, ladies and gentlemen, any sort of ballot box can be rigged, and there's always going to be a danger of that, and we should work very, very hard to try to make sure that our ballots are protected and we have safeguards on these things. In the voting machines that we have in Louisiana, you know, you're allowed to inspect them, and I think as time goes on, we should work very hard for ways that we have further inspections. But there are so many different candidates for office, both in the United States and elsewhere around the world, and a lot of people have vested interests of both sides, Republicans and Democrats, to keep the voting process fair. The Democrats don't want to be cheated, and the Republicans don't want to be cheated by the Democrats, and et cetera, et cetera. And they're not to the point yet, ladies and gentlemen, where they sit in the room and decide, you win this election, I win the next election. That's not the way it works. And it can't work that way really on a local level. So there's a vested interest in these individual parties having a fair process. even though we must be on our guard and we must know that voting machines can be altered and that the voting process can be compromised. In fact, ballot boxes can be stuffed as well. There's many different ways that there can be fraud during election time. The thing you've got to remember is that if you continue to scream and screech about these things and people have no confidence in any sort of honesty in the elections, our own people are not going to try to get involved in elections. And yet I do believe there, even though there is some fraud, there's enough honesty in it, again, because of the contest between major people, lawyers and major officials, and sometimes people with much money on both sides of the equation. They all have a vested interest in having the election fair. So although there can be cases of greed and forgery and fraud, and there certainly have been in the United States of America, if you tout this too loudly and too long, what you're going to do basically is get people out of the process. And let me tell you something, our people need to be in the process. It is a scandal that there are not many thousands of our people already right now elected to the legislatures of the various states around the United States of America. We should be. I got elected twice to office, and I had tremendous runs in some very major offices in the United States of America. And I can tell you that that's even with my more controversial background. So I can tell you, we can have some electoral successes. The first thing you do is build a fine movement in whatever city or community you live in, or area of the state you live in. Assemble. And it's not that hard to do it. Just a little bit of courage, a little bit of intelligence, a little bit of hard work. You can assemble 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 men, you know, and women together who are dedicated to the ideas of our heritage and our rights and our traditions, and develop them and encourage them and inspire them and organize them. And then when election time comes, you have a tremendous force for any state seat, especially that's where you start, in the state legislature, whether it be in the state senate or state house of representatives or even in the city council or school board. But get your people out there and create this force. A couple hundred people can raise more money than the opposition. A couple hundred people can campaign better than the opposition. And I tell you, the average American in this country, as every poll has shown, is opposed to affirmative action. The average American is opposed to the absolute disgrace and the corruption of our welfare system, opposed to the way our foreign aid is given out. We give aid to foreign countries, yet we have Americans here at home that are suffering. It's just a scandal, ladies and gentlemen. And the government doesn't give you any choice about your taxes. How in the world can the government come in and force you to pay taxes under threat of imprisonment and then take your money and send it to another country where people haven't ever paid a penny in taxes? I mean, this is, to me, it's insane. But these are the kind of principles that the average voter, you know, thinks about. I think the average voter can be reached on issues such as Israel as well. I think, you know, but you have to go to them. And when you're a small enough race with just a few thousand registered voters in that particular district, and you have a couple hundred very dedicated men and women who are going to work and knock on doors and say, vote for my friend John Doe because he's a good man and he represents us and he's the only one that stands up for us, you have an unbeatable combination. This is what we should have been doing years and years ago. And the fact that I'm the only one that's been elected in the last few years is really a scandal. You know, I prefer not to think it's any testimony to my, you know, genius or abilities. I don't say that I'm a genius. I don't say that I have exceptional abilities. You know, I'm just an average European American, Anglo-Saxon European American. That's all I am. You know, I think that I've got some gifts, but I think that there's literally millions of people who are just as equipped as I am to run for office successfully for our principles and stand up for our principles. And it's a scandal we don't have more people in office. So, okay, you can talk about the voting machines and you can talk about these kind of things. And when you work in a particular election, you should work to make sure that the process is secure and the process is fair. But let's get out of this process of telling people, you can never win because the voting machines are rigged. That just keeps our people from doing what we've got to do. I don't really believe that. I think there are cases of fraud, but I don't think that's a major factor. And another thing I've been talking about in recent days, you know, and I say this in a reasonable way. I'm not making any smears against anybody. I'm just debating this issue in what I think to be in a fair and sensible way, and that's the whole idea of this Northwest migration. I got a letter the other day from an individual. He said, well, you know, in South Africa, we warned about what was going to happen, and if the people would have done that in South Africa, you know, South Africa wouldn't have faced the crisis that we faced. Well, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. It's like anything else. The South Africans, when they had control over the government, could have done this. I mean, the government itself, when they still had control over their own government, could have set up part of that country for a, you know, for a, quote, white homeland. And this would have been a great answer to the to what happened later in South Africa. It would have been a great safety valve. But you're not going to get that unless you have control over the government. And the government of the United States is not going to let you do that in the great Northwest. And right now, if you have people that flee the other parts of the United States of America and head to the, quote, Northwest to create this Northwest Republic or whatever, you're going to basically behead our movement in the United States of America. Our people need the contact with our natural leaders, those who will convince them, who will teach them about our heritage and our value system. We are still the vast majority in the United States of America, everywhere, not just in the great Northwest, but everywhere. And I think that, you know, trying to run off to the Northwest right now would be a disaster if you brought all of our people there together at this one moment in the great Northwest. I think basically you'd have a very, very tiny percentage of the population even there. No, we've got to bring forth our message to our people. We've got to go among our people. I have no objection to the idea of people, you know, if they prefer that part of the country. And those who want to do that, that's fine. But I'm just giving you my opinion. And my opinion is that you might go to communities near your major cities or near where you live and find the white areas, white neighborhoods, white counties or parishes or white districts or white sections of states to have a more comfortable life for yourself and your family, more secure life for your family. No one would blame you for doing that. But don't leave entirely the field of battle to our enemies. And there are still so many millions of Americans, and most Americans who are more ready to be awakened as to what's really happening are in those areas where the presence, you know, where the problems do exist to a greater extent. So when you go off to the Northwest and you leave these people without the guidance they need, I think we're making a big mistake in terms of just writing off great percentages of our population. I don't think that this kind of solution is anywhere possible. I think that we must, in some manner, have control over our own government, that this must come someday. I think this can happen. I think there'll be a lot of different methods that will happen with this, but I think it can happen. I think there'll be a consensus one day for this change. I think it's got to happen fast. I think, obviously, because the numerics, the numerical realities are rushing against us. But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, I think that the idea, the human idea, the human spirit can change things in a heartbeat, in an instant, if we just have the determination and dedication necessary to see that this type of change is accomplished, that our people are awakened and motivated and inspired, and I'm doing the best I can to do that. Thank you, take care, and good day.
This has been David Duke for Our Heritage and Our Freedom.